amazing. About the time you think you know all those songs, they lead one you don't know, and that was just beautiful. That was beautiful. I wrote that one down. Go home and I won't do it like he did it, but I'll do it the way I do it. Which means they'll never sing it, but won't be for my want of trying. Well, I'm glad you're here tonight. Those of you that are my age or younger, I hope we can learn how to tap a resource better than maybe we have in the past. And those of you that maybe are somewhat my senior, you will allow us to do so. Many times as I travel around the Brotherhood, I have a feeling that sometimes the subjects I select don't always match up with everybody in the audience. For instance, sometimes I'm asked to talk about being good parents or how to have a good start to your marriage, and I look out and there's a 75 or 85 year old widow lady there that's just tickled to be there, but I know that it's a little bit of a stretch. She's there to encourage us all, and she does. I was down at Meadville recently, and I don't know how old this lady was, but she was well into her 80s, and I went to visit her toward the end of the week. She hadn't missed the night, and you could tell it was a real struggle for her to get there. And I complimented her and told her how much it meant to me for her to be there, and she said, oh, I wouldn't miss them. But she said, you know, the hard part is I have to stay up so late. I'm usually in bed by 7:30, and I haven't got to bed before 9 all week. But tonight I'd like to address a lesson as best I can for those of you that might be a little older than I am. But we're all getting older, aren't we? That's a fact. We're not what we were 10, 20, 30 years ago. I only have to go out to the driveway and do a one-on-one pickup basketball game with either one of my boys. Yeah, I can still do it, but it's getting tough. And then hope I get back in before they see the damage that's been done. And it's not going to get any better, is it? We're none of us what we were 10, 20, 30 years ago. Some of us, as one writer wrote, we've just about concluded you go straight from puberty to senility with little stops in between. It just goes so fast. But aging is something that our society is not comfortable with in general. Advertising is geared toward making us all something we're not, and usually that something has to do with being younger than we are. And when a society isn't comfortable with something, I've noticed they tend to bathe that in humor. Because humor is a great salve. Therefore, when we get into aging, we hear such great little ditties as, you know you're getting old when your back goes out more than you do. You know you're getting old when almost everything hurts and what doesn't hurt doesn't work anymore. Agatha Christie, the mystery writer, married an archaeologist. Kind of an odd combination, a creative writer and an archaeologist. And when she was asked, why did you marry an archaeologist? She just smiled wryly and said, you know, the older I get, the more he appreciates me. We bathe it in humor, and it's good, clean fun. But I think we do that because sometimes, at least as a society, maybe not so much in the church, we just don't know how to handle this topic. But you know, we're usually our own worst critics when it comes to aging. Have you ever noticed how children don't mind us getting old a bit? It's us that minds the getting old. In fact, I could make a case that I believe youngsters even prefer us when we get old. You ever seen that bond between a child and a grandparent or a great-grandparent? It's wonderful. And that bond wouldn't have existed were there less of a gap in the ages. And these youngsters get very defensive about their grandparents. You say something that infers age or a terminability about them, and that's a very troubling thing for them. That's natural. When I was researching for this topic, and I want to share this with you, I came across a writing that's purported to be a little third grader who wrote a little essay entitled, What is a Grandmother? And I enjoyed this. Maybe you will. She writes, A grandmother is a lady that has no kids of her own. She likes other people's little boys and girls. A grandfather is a man grandmother. He goes for walks with the boys and talks fishing and stuff like that, but grandma doesn't have to do anything but be there. Grandmothers are old, so they shouldn't play hard or run around. It's enough that they drive us to the mall where the pretend horse is and have lots of quarters. Or if they take us for walks, they slow down at things like pretty leaves and caterpillars. They never say, hurry up. Usually grandmothers are fat, but not too fat to tie your shoes. They wear glasses and funny clothes. And they can do tricks like taking out their teeth. Grandmothers don't have to be smart. They only have to answer questions like, why isn't God married, and why do dogs chase cats? But when they read something to us, they don't skip pages, and they don't mind reading the same thing over and over. Everyone should have a grandmother, especially if they don't have a TV. They're the only grown-ups who have time. I thought that was really pretty insightful. And although I'm not a grandparent, I can relate to many of those thoughts. Yet, on a more serious note, there are those who don't view getting older with that same supportive feeling, do they? Even some who've retired don't delight in the position they find themselves in. One man wrote, I get up each morning and dust off my wits, pick up the paper and check the obits. If my name is still missing, I know I'm not dead, so I eat a good breakfast and I go back to bed. Now, I'll have to admit to you, that's kind of appealing some days for me. Don't have to be 85 for that to have a ring to it. But I suspect we'd all get tired of it. And yet, when I spend, and I've spent more time the last several years than previously, talking to older Christians, I sometimes hear a very serious tone in their voice that causes me to sadden a little bit and causes me to trouble. Especially if they feel life has dealt them an unfair hand, and sometimes it seems like it has. Sometimes I sense in older Christians a sense of uselessness. A sense, I don't want to be in the way. People who were often very productive Christians in their younger years now see it somewhat as futile because they have the wisdom, they have some answers they've never had before, and nobody's asking them. And that saddens me. Sometimes I sense in these older Christian brothers and sisters a little sense of guilt. A sense where they'll say phrases to the effect, I blew it. Or if only I could have another chance, whether it's raising their kids or how they treated their mate, if only I could do it again, comes out in our conversations. You know, there's a lot of guilt in phrases like that. If only. Across the fields of yesterday, he sometimes comes to me, the little lad just back from play, the boy I used to be. He smiles at me so wistfully when once he's crept within. It seems as though he'd hoped to see the man I might have been. A sense of if only, or could it have been different? Guilt writes that kind of stuff. Whether it knows it or not, that's what writes that kind of stuff. Sometimes I sense a feeling of self-pity, for want of a better way to describe it. And this may be the most damaging of all attitudes that sometimes as we get a little older we adopt. A sense, nobody cares, so why should I? Nobody cares if I hurt, nobody cares if I live, nobody cares if I die. That vacillation between blame and bitterness, that can paralyze a great resource at our disposal. And sometimes I sense the attitude of fear. It's very common for older people, especially those that are retired and on fixed incomes, to have a fear about the economy? Will I have enough? Will I outlive my resources? Well, let me tell you, you're never going to outlive your resources as long as you've got brothers and sisters in Christ, because they're your resource. Fear, oh, the children are so busy now, I just don't get to see them like I used to and I want to. A fear of fading health. Widow ladies who are afraid their house will crumble down amongst them, and fear of losing friends, sometimes fear of losing a mate. And when you couple all of these things, and I've just given you some, when you couple all of these things with the impatience of youth that surrounds them, and those of us that are younger have to understand that even though we try not to, we are very impatient. And if we're not awfully careful, we're going to come in there like a bull in a china shop and say, now move over because it's my turn, and it may not be quite our turn yet. But they sometimes, when surrounded with these attitudes and surrounded by the impatience of youth, begin to believe the great lie, I'm really not important, and I'm really not valuable. They begin to believe and think along these lines. I don't want to humiliate myself in front of the brethren anymore. I don't want to be made to feel old and useless. Therefore, leave me alone. Let me live my life and don't ask of me what I once did. Living a life too many times too full of fear and too full of pity to be what I believe the Scriptures tell us is a great resource. And it seems to me that that may be the worst way to live, or maybe the worst way to die. Because a life lived alone without Christians and without friends and without making a contribution is literally death already, isn't it? And it's so needless. So needless. I'd like this evening to look at two Old Testament teachings. Some of you are going to expect me to go to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. I'm not going there because I know you know that one. That's where it talks about the eyes getting dim and the teeth falling out. And if we're not careful, we put that into humor because we're uncomfortable with it. I want to take you another couple of passages. I want to take you, first of all, to the oldest psalm, at least the oldest provable psalm, Psalms 90. Wasn't written by David. Written by Moses. Don't know exactly when he wrote it, but we know it was probably somewhere between 1400 and 1500 BC, as I calculate age, and even if you calculate it a little bit differently, it was several hundred years before David. And I'd like to look at a few passages there. I think, can't prove it, but I think, based upon the tenor of this psalm, it was very probably written late in Moses' life, maybe as he was about to see the promised land that he was never allowed to see. But it talks about how God is and always has been there. Look at verse 2. Well, I'll start with verse 1. Lord, thou hast been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever thou hast formed the earth, and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. Now, I mean no disrespect by this crude paraphrase, but he's saying God is older than the hills. That's what he's saying. Our great God is older than the hills, and none of us, whether we're 110 or 150, are older than the hills, are we? But then Moses, with the inspired Spirit, turns the finger of introspection not to God, but to himself. And I just want to just scan the next 8 or 10 verses with you. Verse 3, thou turnest man to destruction. Destruction there is really better translated dust. What he's saying is literally what he wrote in Genesis. We were made of dust and we're going to go back to dust. Thou turnest man to destruction, or you turn man back to dust, and sayest, return ye children of men. Verse 4, for 1,000 years in thy sight are but as yesterday, when it is past, and as the watch of night. In other words, it just flies by. Here's a man who had a full life, and he's saying 1,000 years as if it was yesterday, and it just flies by. And we all relate to that. Verse 5. Thou carriest them away as a flood. The days are being carried away as a flood. They are asleep. They're gentle, but they don't last long. In the morning they are like grass which groweth up. Verse 6. They grow up in the morning, and the evening they're cut down. Life just pops up, and before you know it, it seems like it's being cut down. Moses describing the aging process. Look at verse 9. For all our days are passed away in that wrath, and we spend our years as a tale that was told. It just is like a whispering moment. It's just like Moses was saying, life is one big sigh. And if you read this, you can just feel the sigh coming off of the pages. Earl read this for us Sunday morning. I probably wouldn't remember that, but I knew when Thursday night was coming. And when he read that, I could just hear the sigh coming out of these verses as he went down through this in our Sunday morning scripture reading. How do we live, Moses is asking us, since life is like a flood that's powerful but gone quickly, since it's like dust, since it's like grass that rises up and is soon cut down, since it's like yesterday, it's lived with a long sigh, how do we respond to life today? That's what Moses is leading us up to in this psalm. And look at verse 12, which is the key verse I want us to look at tonight. So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Now, King James, that's what I read, and the phrase that's translated, number your days, doesn't mean simply to count them. It means to be accountable for them. It's saying not only count how old you are, but be accountable for all of the days God has given you. That's what Moses is saying there in the Hebrew. And he wants you to be accountable or take notice of all the days God gives you. Why? That you may apply your hearts unto wisdom. In light of all this, teach us to be accountable and teach us to apply the days you've given us, O Lord, toward wisdom. Now this is a prayer. Some of you will have that postscript under where it says Psalms 90. It says a prayer of Moses, the man of God. Just a side note. In the Psalms, when you see that little postscript, that's in the original text, so that's inspired. Unlike chapter headings or the headings you have at the top of the book, those little postscripts are inspired. So we know this is a prayer of Moses. But I want you to note there in verse 12, he doesn't say count the years, he says count the days. And I believe that's on purpose. He's saying, I want you to be thankful for every single day God gives you and use it to develop a wise heart. Our hair may be gray, our face may be wrinkled, but God makes it possible for us to have hearts of wisdom, doesn't He? That principle is as old as this psalm itself. Since every day is a gift of God, live each day enthusiastically for Him, is the message Moses is trying to get through the pages of this psalm. We don't live it enthusiastically because our circumstances warrant it, because many times they don't. We don't live it enthusiastically because of ourself, because our self is going to cave in on us someday, gradually. And we don't live it just for others. We live it for Him with a capital H. That's what Moses is telling us. Now, choosing an attitude of enthusiasm rather than the attitude of a long sigh is the key. Now, some of you may say, well, if you only knew, John. Or some of you may be thinking, John, when you're my age, you're going to see this differently. Well, that may be right. But I want you to remember that this isn't my words we're looking at. These are the Lord's words. I may well see it differently, but that won't change the truth. The truth is, use all of your days to develop wisdom of the heart. We hear far too little of this, I believe, in our human, secular society today. Because that society only is interested because it only believes in the horizontal relationships. But when Moses integrates the vertical relationship between a man and his God, it puts a whole different dimension on it. It's like looking from going from two-dimensional to three-dimensional. Have you ever gone to some of those big screen shows in some of the amusement parks, and they'll give you the glasses? They have this down at Disney World, and the butterflies just come off the screen. It's like seeing things you never saw before when we apply the vertical and not simply the horizontal. God comes like a beam of light onto this passage and says, I want you to see what all of you, young and old, can and should be. God says, you honor me with each day I give you, and I'll give you the enthusiasm with which to live it. I believe that with all my heart. I don't always live it with all of my heart, but I believe it to the best of my ability. And you know, we have some excellent models of this truth found in verse 12 in the Old Testament, and that's the second place I'd like for us to take a look at. If you have your Bibles, go to Joshua chapter 14. These are two passages that, yes, we're familiar with, but they're not ones we normally use in this text. But these are golden. Now, the man we're going to find in Joshua 14, you all know of, but you may not know this part of him. Some of you do. It's the man Caleb that I want to look at. Now, most of us remember Caleb from Numbers chapter 13, where Joshua and Caleb were the two spies that went to spy out the land and came back and gave the right report. We know that story. We know that passage. But now we're going to find Caleb an old man, even by biblical standards. And if you're living, or if you're approaching some of those beautiful sunset years of your life, some of those wonderful twilight years of your life, you model for some of us who are still in the rat race, who are still in a helter-skelter lifestyle, the wisdom we need. And that's exactly what we're going to see Caleb doing here in Joshua chapter 14. If no one else has told you lately, let me tell you as plainly and as bluntly as I can. If you're an older brother or sister in Christ, we desperately need you. We desperately need you. If the youth is the future of the church, if those in our middle years are the muscle of the church, those of you in these golden years are the very heart and backbone of the church. And we can't do without any of those three, can we? Do you realize that God could do anything He wants with your life? He has the sovereign power and the sovereign right to do that. Now, I can't explain to you why for me or why for you He's chosen to leave us here while taking others to be in His bosom. But I know full well that He didn't do it out of accident. He did it because He knew the divine reason for it. Even at my age, He has taken people that I thought were infinitely more talented than I and infinitely more zealous for His cause than I. They're gone and I'm here. Don't ask me to explain why, but I will tell you I'm here for a reason, and so are you. If you're 60, 70, 80, or 90, He's left you here for a reason, hasn't He? His sovereign grace has placed you in our midst. You are a gift from Him to us. And therefore, you really don't have a right to live it unto yourself, do you? Because you're our gift from God. I think that's important for us to nurture. I think that's important for those of us who maybe aren't quite there yet to really work on as we get there, because it will be that long and we'll be there. Caleb didn't hibernate. Caleb didn't let down. He is the incarnate truth of Psalms chapter 90, verse 12. A teacher once told me, John, if you're going to present to an audience abstract truths, always try to incarnate them with the flesh. What his meaning is, don't just give theory, try to give examples. And Jesus did that so masterfully. Well, Caleb is the incarnate truth of what Moses wrote about in Psalms 90. A man who gives an account for all of his days and applied them to the wisdom of God. Caleb is a model of enthusiastic living far past what many people done. In Joshua chapter 14, just very brief survey of this chapter, Caleb recalls his early years in verses 6 through 9. He then recalls the present, or his middle years in verses 10 and 11, and then he recalls the latter years, which were actually the present, in verses 12 through 14. Now, just a very brief background so that we all refresh our minds. The land had been conquered. That's where we find ourselves in Joshua 14. The children had crossed the Jordan River. Joshua was their leader. And Caleb in this chapter reflects back. And you can just see it. He comes to his old contemporary warrior, Joshua, the only two men that came back and gave a good report. And he says, Joshua, do you remember how it was 45 years ago when we were only 40 and we were on the mission for the Lord? He says, Joshua, do you remember how it was when we stood arm in arm and stood firm for the Lord when none of the others would? Caleb was a man of faith. He was a man of conviction. He was a man of dedication, just like many of you were when you were 40. I think many of you can relate to this man. You, in those middle years, stood firm for the truth. And those of us that have come behind you owe you an eternal debt of gratitude for doing that very thing, because we wouldn't be assembled here if you hadn't. That's a fact. And that's what Caleb and Joshua did. Now, I want to just take a few minutes to give you a side point that I think is very important. And then we'll go back and pick up our story. Put yourself in Caleb's shoes for a minute. You and Joshua both spied out the land. You both came back and gave a true report. You were partners in truth. Then Moses died. And what happened? Joshua was chosen to lead, wasn't he? Now remember, you're in Caleb's shoes. How's that going to make you feel? What do you mean Joshua was going to lead? I was there, Lord. What do you mean you're going to pick Joshua to go? I was there. Not one single tinge of that in the Holy Scriptures. The reaction of Caleb when Joshua was chosen was 100% cooperation. I raise this point because as we go through our years, I believe there are often times when people are placed ahead of us in authority, when if we look at it, we feel and appear to be as totally qualified and dedicated as they are, but for some reason, they've been selected to lead. You may not understand why, I may not understand why, they may not understand why, but that's the way it's happened. How are we going to react? You know, one of the things that will aid you faster than anything I know of is to have your heart eaten out because you're bitter because someone was chosen and you weren't. And you don't see that in Caleb. And I'm not saying I see that in you. I just think it's a tremendous lesson from this story that we should never, never forget. When I have ceased to break my wings against the faultiness of things and learn that compromises wait behind each hardly opened gate, when I can look life in the eyes, grown calm and very coldly wise, life will have given me the truth and taken in exchange my youth. That's the trade-off. Youth for wisdom. That's the most wonderful trade any man or woman can make. Too many squander youth, but a Christian trades youth for wisdom. That's what I'm trying to say, I guess, in this story of Caleb. I'm not saying we don't get older, because we all know that we do. I'm saying that if you're a child of God and apply yourself as you get older, you become wiser. That's what Moses was telling us in Psalms 90. If we focus on difficulties, life is going to be awfully miserable. But if we change, because we can't change most of those difficulties of our life. But if you choose an attitude of enthusiasm, those difficulties will become much easier to go through, won't they? Now back to Joshua 14. Caleb, in the 10th verse of Joshua 14, says, "And now, behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spake his word unto Moses." It's been 45 years since Caleb and Joshua spied out the land, "while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness, and now, lo, I am this day 85 years old." He was 40 when he spied out the land. It's been 45 years. He said, "I'm now 85 years old." Verse 11, "And yet I am as strong this day as I was the day Moses sent me." He's saying, "I'm as strong at 85 as I was when I was 40. Isn't that a wonderful statement? Isn't that a wonderful attitude? And that kind of attitude is contagious. Absolutely contagious. "As my strength was then, even so my strength is now for war, both to go out and to come in." That last phrase, "to go out and to come in," is a Hebrew colloquialism. And it literally meant, I'm strong enough to go out to war, and I'm wise enough to come in and give counsel. And he's saying, I'm mentally and physically ready for battle. That's what Caleb was saying. 85-year-old man trudged around for 40 years in the wilderness, and he said, "I'm ready to go. You want counsel? I got counsel. You want me to fight? I'll fight." Isn't that wonderful? Well, let's go a little further. Verse 12. "Now therefore give me this mountain whereof the Lord spake in that day, for thou heardest in that day how the Anakims were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said." Now understand what Caleb's saying. 85-year-old man says, "These people haven't been driven out of these hills. You give me that mountain and I'll get them out of there." There are no bedroom slippers for Caleb. Caleb didn't say, "You give me a nice villa down on the Jordan bank because I deserve it." Caleb doesn't say, "Okay, now I'm 85 years old. It's time for these young people to take over. I'm going to kick my heels up." He says, "You give me a mountain and I'll take care of it." Isn't that tremendous? Isn't that tremendous? What a rich attitude we're reading about. That's what we're reading about, is an attitude of a godly man. I think the attitude God has for all of us in mind. You may have seen it. It's a little one-cell cartoon. It's a picture of a man, and I won't do it justice. He's crawling across the desert. He's obviously dehydrated. He has no water. He's crawled over cactuses, and there's blood running down it. And he's laying there about to die, and underneath the guy says, "You know, if things keep on like this, I might get a little discouraged." Isn't that wonderful? "You know, if it gets any worse, I might get a little discouraged." Let's look at our life. What message do you send to others? What attitude permeates from you? Honestly, what are you saying with your attitude? Because that's what's speaking. You're growing older? Well, welcome to the club. Life harder? God never promised it wouldn't be. Unfair things happen to you? That's true of every single person in this auditorium, isn't it? In our opinion. Yet none of those things cause us to think as we do, because we think as we choose to think, don't we? On his 75th birthday, Douglas MacArthur wrote the following. In the central place of every heart, there is a recording chamber. As long as it receives messages of beauty, hope, cheer, and courage, so long you are young. But when the wires are all down and your heart is covered with the snows of pessimism, the ice of cynicism, then, and only then, are you old. That's why I chose the topic, I'm not that old. Maybe I could have said, you're not that old. We can either curl up, or we can fold up, and we can dry up, or we can follow Caleb's example. And whatever stage of life we're in, we can look the Lord and as we pray to Him and say, Lord, give me that mountain because I'm ready to take it. Life holds the offer and we make the choices, don't we? I think it's important that all of us, but especially as we age, we continue to view life as a challenge and not as a threat. Life is not the enemy. Is it? It's the opportunity. Sure, the world's changing, but that's the challenge. Sure, we don't do some things that we used to be able to do, but that's the challenge. Sure, we didn't know things were all going to happen the way they've happened, but that's the challenge, isn't it? If we knew all along what was going to happen, there wouldn't be any challenge with it. In Joshua chapter 14, verse 14, the last passage I want to take out of this chapter, I just want to look at the last phrase, but I'll read it and leave out some of those long names for brevity. Hebron therefore became the inheritance of Caleb. In other words, he got the mountain. Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb because that he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. And that word wholly, W-H-O-L-L-Y in the King James, means fully. He completely followed the Lord. How much energy does it take to completely follow the Lord? Well, we've all got plenty to do that, don't we? Don't be too tired to fully follow the Lord. Don't be too tired to fully be committed to the Lord. Oh, I know you can't do everything you'd like to. I can't either. And it'll get worse. For me, and it'll probably get worse for you. But think what an effect Caleb's have on younger people. Think what an infectious effect Caleb's attitude would have on a congregation. And I'm not saying this in the future tense because I won't name names, but as I look out over this audience, I see a lot of Caleb's. And I am so supremely thankful for you. Because you said in your later years, give me that mountain, Lord, and I'll do my best with it. From now to the grave, let that be your life. Let them surround our graves with the inspiration of that example. I thought of the chorus of one of the songs in the blue hymnal. Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in His wonderful face. And the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of His glory and grace. Oh, that's good. Believe it or not, I almost toyed this afternoon with singing that chorus for you, but I knew that would be a rather poor ending. But those words are so good. We all have a choice how we're going to live however many years God's given us. We know that. No one else can choose the attitude with which I approach my remaining years, and no one else can choose the attitude with which you approach the remaining years. And you may have the most enthusiastic attitude in the world, and I can't promise you that it will allow you to live years longer and longer, but I can promise you it will allow you to live years better and better. And that's what we want. and it will so impact those who are learning at your feet. You don't understand fully how many of us are still learning at your feet. Some of you sisters who don't get up here, oh, I learned from you. I shared this with some of you this morning, and those of you that didn't have the chance to be with us this morning, I felt like I was in Philippi on the riverbank with godly sisters praising the Lord. I was glad I didn't teach because I was a student. Some of you brethren who have over the years fought the battle so that men such as I and my children can have the church as it is today. And maybe your memory, maybe your speech, maybe your health is a little tottery, but as I visit with you, you teach me so much. So much. We bury people every month, don't we? Some of you went to a funeral this week. But those who are glorious in their final departure are those who have stamped an impression on those around them of a positive, fulfilling lifestyle. You'll spend from now until the grave with whatever life you choose and with whatever attitude. What do you choose? Moses said in Psalms 90, "Number your days and apply them to wisdom of the heart." Some of you are way, way along the road toward doing that. But even if you've not even started, you'll be surprised how far you can get in just a few years with the Lord holding your hand. The journey started when you accepted Christ, but the journey can't end until we go to our grave. I hope I can encourage others like some of you encourage me. But I hope all of us will take a good look at ourselves to see if we are counting those days and using it to apply a wise heart. Longevity is not a virtue unless it's mixed with quality. We're going to close our lesson tonight and extend the gospel invitation. If you haven't accepted Christ, then you're not part of this family. You're not part of the church. And you can't fully feel what I've been talking about tonight. That's a fact. You understand the words. I haven't used any hard words. I couldn't use any hard words. But you haven't understood fully and felt what I'm talking about. To be part of a family that has the young, that has the middle, and that has, as Proverbs calls them, the hoary or the white-headed ones, to be the heart and the soul of the church. Retirement is not a biblical word. It's a secular word. Don't rob us of the treasure you hold if you're older. And those that are younger, let's always be at the feet of where we can learn. Because there is nothing as foolish as youth that thinks it has all the answers. And there's nothing as tragic as age that won't share them.